Welcome to Season 6 of the Fight Science Podcast. I'm your host, Jordan Sullivan. In this series, we're continuing our journey of broadening our knowledge in the field of combat sports science by speaking to experts in the fields of nutrition science, psychology, strength and conditioning, and much more to help you become the best practitioner you can be. Today, our guest on the podcast is Clint Wattenberg. As many of you will know, Clint is the Director of Performance Nutrition at the UFC Performance Institute, Las Vegas. He is one of the most prominent figures in the areas of combat sports science and is well and truly leading the charge when it comes to nutrition for combat athletes. In this episode, we are going to be breaking down his contributions to the UFC PI's latest journal and talk about what it is exactly that the top nutrition professionals in MMA are doing with their athletes to make them the best athletes they can be. There's a lot of good stuff in this one, so let's get to it. All right, and Zoom's lovely new lady voice that it has integrated into the platform has told us we started recording. Do you hear that on your end, Clint, that it tells you we started recording?
It's very pleasant.
Yeah, it's very, very odd. I did it for the first time yesterday and it really threw me off. I have like this like real weird mental tick when I start the podcast. You have to start it the same way, as the listeners will know, and then that completely threw me off, but that's all right. Anyway, back on for the podcast for a second time, we've got the one and only Mr. Clint Wattenberg, Director of Performance Nutrition at the UFC PI. Welcome back, mate.
Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure to talk shop with you, Jordy.
And what's been happening with you guys? I think the last time we spoke was probably before COVID, I would even say. And you guys, obviously everyone knows UFC just led from the front during the COVID period, but no one was more busier than yourself. How's everything been the last year or so with everything going on with the team?
I will throw Charles Stoll out there as much, much more active on the road in event support than I was. And he's really, as you know, revolutionized what we're able to do to support athletes. So when we came back on the road in May, started supporting events in Jacksonville, and then I returned to our home of the Apex, which became our global event home for the next 12 months. We went from supporting just over half of the fight weeks in the event support, which turns into really like a 7 to 8 day time commitment and workload support of supporting athletes arrival all the way through making weight, refeeding, rehydrating, and then fueling up for the fight. And we went from just over half of the events that we supported to every single event post COVID. And we will be supporting every event moving forward. Because it was the events were at Apex, which is literally a stone's throw from the Performance Institute, or in this like crazy fight island bubble where athletes have little to no capacity to find the foods that they need that are very specific and highly restrictive compared to a normal diet. We became imperative to supporting athletes in that scenario, and working with dietitians like yourself and other nutrition providers really engaged the community and enabled us to be kind of that last mile support for athletes that we hadn't really worked with in the past, and provide an opportunity to collaborate with some great providers out there that we may not have been able to, at least in the same kind of intimacy. Dietitians like yourself, we've been able to connect with, but some of those others that are out there, we maybe didn't have the connection or the touch points. And it's really just been a huge windfall for us on the UFC PI nutrition team in many ways, which is kind of ironic in some regards related to the pandemic. But we have now been supporting every single event since last May, 39 out of 41 in the calendar year of 2020. And like I said, we're going to be supporting every event moving forward. And with increased expectations for event support has come funding support for our team. We just hired a fourth full-time sport dietitian. When we first started talking, Jordy, I remember Jeff Nowitzki send me your number. Is like, hey, Kai Kara France's nutritionist, dietitian wants to have words with you. And I was like, okay. So we connected on WhatsApp. And back then it was me and one intern. And for a while it was just me, no interns. And now we have four full-time sports dietitians. We have our internship program that is kind of an academic training of future leaders of the sports nutrition industry that started on Monday of this week, which was 2 days ago. And then we also will be hosting a Gatorade SNP, kind of a sports nutrition immersion fellow. So we're going to have a 10-month fellow that starts with us in June. So our team, our business is booming. The nutrition team continues to grow. And there's one other wrinkle there. And that is the fact that our culinary partnership with Trifecta, while you know amazing and really great, breaking a lot of ground and building a lot of opportunities to support athletes over fight week, has come to an end, and we are now internalizing that entire fight week support, which is going to create a lot of vertical integration and synergies within you know all the way from the ingredient and the programming and the recipes and the menu all the way to the nutrition programming and support in the lead up to even fight camp, and being able to really close that loop of the 365 day a year mixed martial arts athlete support, which is incredibly exciting.
Yeah, I remember that, Clint. I think we were in Shenzhen, somewhere in China. And yeah, the nutrition support was basically you and I think it was Chef Mario at the table. And then look at it now, it's just grown. Did you ever think that it would get this big, you know, when you took this job, and did you ever envision that it would become what it is today?
Yeah, that's a great, it's a great question. And actually in the last week, we celebrated our 4-year anniversary of opening the doors, May 22nd. So that was this past Saturday. So that was a pretty monumental moment to be able to reflect back. And, you know, when I took on this job, we had no travel expectations, no event support to speak of. It was really about addressing the preparation and trying to support athletes in that lead up to the event. We learned pretty quickly that last mile of the marathon was critical. It's not everything. What you do in the, you know, the training leading up to the first 25 miles is very important. The, you know, the strategy that you're using during fight camp in that first part of the race is important. But at the end of the day, what everybody sees on TV, you know, in terms of the marathon, or what people recognize in terms of the weight making process, is really that fight week. And so we had to close the loop. We had to, you know, make an impact in that area in order to get buy-in and to really make the connection and the touch point with the athletes, which at the end of the day is one of the most critical metrics of our effectiveness, is creating those relationships, having contact, and creating continuity in our support. And so when we recognize that, then that's where this amazing partnership with Trifecta, led by Chef Mario, who is a good friend of mine, continues to be, and was so critical at taking it off the ground and building something that hadn't been done, and really providing a resource to the fighter community that I think is pretty special.
Yeah, it was cool to sit back and watch it too. It's just every time that I saw you guys, it was just growing into this monumental monster of a thing. And it's crazy. And like you said, world-class. And it's created this huge community, I feel, within like the nutrition community, within combat sports, where it's this huge integration, which I feel you don't see in a lot of other sports, which is really cool. But anyway, Clint, the reason I got you on today is we're talking to a lot of the guys from the PI, a cross-sectional performance analysis and projection of the UFC athlete volume 2. Everyone, when I say that from the UFC PI, give me that same look of almost relief that you're giving me right now. It's this monster project, probably the biggest project known right now, with the most complete information about the modern MMA combat athlete. You guys did all this during COVID. What was it like writing this and juggling your responsibilities and all your roles at the PI?
Yeah, I mean, it was a beast, and I'm sure Duncan will be the first to shed light on the task at hand, because he was contributor, editor, or you know, manager of everything, and all of this was in addition to our overall workload, and that, as we already highlighted, didn't slow down one bit. We also had a transition of staff, as you know, Alex Eisenberg transitioned off the team, and we brought on Nicole Lai, who's amazing. And recently Levi Mation, who was an intern turned now colleague. So we produced this journal, and you know, I think that the first step was trying to understand what is this beast going to be, and we ended up formulating it around our, you know, essentially our fight camp training phases, kind of the progressive orientation to preparation, instead of just kind of throwing paint at the wall, seeing what sticks, which is, you know, kind of the mindset of work, you know, work as hard as you can until the wheels fall off, is kind of the nature of what most of us do. And what I did when I was a you know, combat sport athlete, as a wrestler in college and otherwise, and you just kind of go and until the wheels fall off. And our goal was to build a comprehensive, integrative I guess, resource for the community that is centered around the approach that we take. And what has been just, I think, taking this to the next level is bringing our Shanghai colleagues on board. And the journal number one was really just a sliver of the insights and in the concepts that we're looking at. And I would say journal number two is a behemoth, and it's still fairly superficial. You know, a lot of these nutrition concepts, as you know, and I see the amazing content that you put out, and it's every day you're digging into something. And even though to a layperson or even a practitioner reading it, like, I don't read 10% of what you put out because it's so much content. You know, I really enjoy looking and skimming it. But as you and I know, that's still just so superficial to what we're actually doing in practice and the depth of resource that we have to empower ourselves with. And immediately following this call, as I shared with you, it's like, okay, we're going to hang up here and then I'm going to go have a global UFC PI nutrition meeting with my colleagues, Reed and Taylor from Shanghai, because you know, the 4 p.m. Pacific is about the only time we can actually have a meeting across the globe. But being able to get these minds together, and not just the nutrition team, but there's a number of chapters that are dietitian and strength coach and sports psychologist and sports scientist and strength coach and, you know, performance director all together contributing to the same article from a variety of different locations and experiences with a variety of different athletes. And so I think that that's one of the most kind of monumental components of this is bringing the performance structure in, you know, to the community in a way that is, you know, really thoughtful and really comprehensive and integrative as we possibly can make it. And I hope that the community does recognize as well that we're still trying to learn about this. Like, this is not peer reviewed literature. This is not, you know, necessarily, I think there's some concepts that we're bringing to the table that are novel, but what we're trying to do is to create some structure and perspective to what we're all trying to do and to create dialogue around it. This is not the only approach to support kind of athletes in these performance paradigms, but really is hopefully creating a conversation around them.
Yeah, such a good point, eh, Clint? Because like you said, it's creating this community, because before this, there really wasn't anything. That's the thing. I think people need to appreciate that this is pretty much laying the foundation of what I think will be probably like the school of combat sports nutrition, because I actually had a student message me and they said, hey, I'm really interested in doing this. Where would you recommend? I said, hey, the UFC just put out this volume, go read it. And then she actually messaged me back a few days later and she went, oh my God, there's so much more to this than what I thought. And I was like, yeah, this is just the beginning. It's crazy. But I know we're a bit strapped for time, Clint. So let's get into it. Like you said, we're not going to go into all the nitty gritty of this because we'll be here for hours and hours, but let's skim over the major, you know, I guess the major focus points that you're involved in with Ryan. There's a lot of integration between the team, but I think the whole journal is broken up into, as you said, all the phases. So let's start at part one, strategy and goals. And there's a really cool part that you talk about here, the sweet spot for making weight in MMA, and the cool little Venn diagram there. Can you talk to us about that?
Yeah. You know, as a nutrition professional, we always are looking to identify how are we going to, I guess, balance the priorities of performance, health, and in our sport, weight making, and in the demands of being competitively sized in the octagon. And so, you know, a lot of it, at least in the sections that I presented, and we, you know, as we laid out the sections, we you know, each selected which sections we thought were most applicable to our skill set. And I took on the more philosophical sections. And that's partially because that's where I largely like to operate is, you know, I'm the director of the program. I get to craft a lot of the philosophy, but I also am, you know, very cognizant around how that orients the application of the science. And so this section really is geared towards how are we communicating that the risk of health, in comparison to the potential benefits of cutting more weight and being bigger in the octagon. And in a lot of the sections in the later parts, especially around the metabolic health sections and otherwise, is really about cleaning up the mess that the weight cutting process has on the body. And so what I wanted to be able to capture is the fact that, you know, into professionals, especially that don't really have the language to communicate to athletes and coaches and other members of the community of why may it be more beneficial to, you know, cut a little bit less weight to focus on performance outcomes that are, you know, traditional performance goals that you might see both in the, you know, MMA skill specific training or in the weight room or in other areas of skill or performance development, as opposed to just focusing on weight, especially for the developmental athlete. And that's another thing that we're trying to capture is the community that is not just geared towards MMA, sorry, the elite UFC community. Of course, we want to address those guys and gals and the coaches and the support team. And that's what we do on a day-to-day basis. But we want to influence the more developmental athletes, those that either are, you know, working towards being in the UFC or working towards just being a competitive combat sport athlete, whatever the discipline. And weight is not always the defining metric, although it can be, to the detriment of health and long-term performance development. So I think that's kind of the main orientation on that front is to really provide some language and some perspective to everybody involved in the process around how to, you know, how to choose a weight division in the preparation, especially around weight and nutrition. One last point that I'll make is, you know, on his way out the door, Paul Felder, I don't know if you saw, he shared, I think he might've posted and then ESPN MMA picked it up as well as others that his, you know, parting words to the sport of MMA is young athletes, focus on your nutrition, don't prioritize weight cutting but prioritize your MMA development. And I couldn't put it better because I feel wholeheartedly that weight cutting is oftentimes seen as a shortcut to success, but it has many, many pitfalls.
That's funny, Clint, because I just wrote a note down there. I said, Paul Felder quote. Just before we got on the call, I saw that and I was going to ask you, did you see this and what did you make of it? Because I feel like it does resonate with that message. You and Forrest have been saying it for years, that 52-week athlete. And I guess, is this what you guys are encompassing with this? Is that, you know, it's not just about making this weight. You know, you got to be an athlete in there and you got to develop. And like you said, it's not just for these elite level guys that have been doing it for 10, 15 years. There's, you know, guys that are coming up and through and not being so weight-centric focused and focusing about their abilities and developing as athletes.
1,000%. And what I'll say too is, we didn't really cover it as much in this journal on the nutrition side. There's points around kind of general prep on the physical side. There's kind of general nutrition strategies. And I think in the fueling fundamentals section, I touch on it a little bit, kind of this balanced plate approach. But really, I think one missing link in terms of the nutrition mindset in terms of closing that loop, as you said, 52-week, 365-day-a-year approach is not being locked in every day, but it's about having direction no matter what phase you're in. And immediately post-fight, we have a number of goals, and it kind of depends on how the nutrition for the, you know, fight for the fight camp, fight week, the weight cut, and the fight itself. How did all those go? And we're going to have, you know, specific nutrition needs related to how the body needs to recover from that process. But there's kind of these general life skills around nutrition, and it may be skills around, you know, food prep and things like that. Culinary, now that we're bringing culinary in-house, that's an area that we really want to be able to kind of build some content and connect with our athletes around preparation methods and things like that. It may be kind of life skills management and connecting the nutrition to the psychology side, and how do we manage that psychological loss of, you know, fight camp, which tells you what to eat and when to eat. And a lot of MMA athletes are really good at eating when they're told, but when they're not in camp, they don't know what the hell to do. And there's a number of different areas that, you know, Charles and I in particular have been batting around, like what kind of content do we want to build around that to provide resources, because the 52-week fight camp is not about being locked in 52 weeks a year. It's about having perspective. It's about periodizing what we do, just like your strength coach is going to periodize. And you don't want to be peaking the week after your fight, right? You want to be recovering and laying the groundwork for that next fight camp.
Yeah, it's a good point, Clint. I actually had this convo with one of my athletes, very, very hyper-focused guy, very detail-oriented. And he got very fixated on that. And I think I have to pull him up and say, like, man, like that 52-week fight camp athlete. It's not 52 weeks of a fight camp. That's not what we mean. Like, man, you need a holiday. You need to go relax. You need to go be a person. You need to be a 21-year-old for a couple of times. It's all built in. Otherwise, like you said, it's just not healthy, is it, to be that fixated and doing this? I think people don't realize that fight camp is straining on your body. Like you said, there's that sweet spot of health and optimizing health and performance and then the weight. And you can't be fixated all that time. But Clint, let's move in. And you spoke about a little bit about like your assessments there. And we'll go, I guess, going into the off camp and starting the fight camp. When you're looking at these guys, you guys talk about a lot in the journal, like your assessment strategies and looking at what's a good weight division for these athletes. What is it best for you and what's going to be best for your competition and your health outside of camp? Can you talk to us about your assessment pieces?
Yeah. So at the Performance Institute, we use a number of assessment tools and we have more coming in as we build relationships and partnerships that with companies that really are the right fit. And it's extremely exciting to have the capacity and the ability to make these objective evaluations and to put that into context. So we do a number of, you know, data collection, different sources of data. So we're doing resting metabolic rate and metabolic efficiency, which is how our body uses different energy substrates at different energy intensities. That's kind of at the core of what we're looking at is metabolism. And I'll probably say metabolism 1,000 times on this 45-minute call. And that's because that's at the core of every single thing that we're looking at on the nutrition front. If we impair metabolism, then everything else is going to get much harder and impossible at some point down the road. And so we're looking at supporting the body and its ability to recover, which you need energy to do that. We're also looking at body composition in a number of different ways. So we're looking, we use a DEXA. We have a number of us that are ISAC certified. We just haven't dedicated the human resources to that because it does require more time than the DEXA and the bioelectrical impedance that we use. So those are the two modes of data collection for our body composition. And then we'll look to we have emerging technology, a partnership that is going to be announced very soon around measuring substrate utilization with a handheld device called Lumen. That's really exciting. And it's a single breath and you can see how much carbs versus fat are you using in any given time. We're going to look at essentially tracking that both for, substrate utilization through a fight camp to see how athletes are adapting to our interventions, but also there's some really creative other, options related to how is that syncing to our recovery, our HRV? How is that syncing to nutrition strategies related to injury status? You can think about brain health where there may be some value to a ketogenic diet. How's our body actually transitioning without doing, finger pricks and things like that? So there's some really cool application to that front. What I will say is, yes, we're using our DEXA in particular to assess fit to weight division. And as any biometric that we're collecting and body composition included, we want to get as consistent of data collection as we can so that we can draw as consistently accurate conclusions as we can. And for that, we're very often being called upon and more being called upon by athletes, managers, and even the UFC matchmakers to evaluate, can this person make the division? Is this a realistic fit? And I just in the last 3 weeks, I've had 5 athletes and I'm like, maybe you can make it once or twice, but is that what a championship run is built upon? And so that's a hard conversation where it's not like my job does not entail saying you cannot do this. That's not within my ability, but I can share my perspective in terms of what it's going to take away from on that health and the performance and the ability to continue to get better through the process. So again, I'm falling back on the language from that first chapter. The last thing that I'll say is all of this data that we collect has got to be made in the context of the individual athlete. If somebody's struggling with mental health, if somebody's struggling with metabolic impairment or gut health issues or injury or whatever the context requires, then we have to include that into our evaluation. And I do feel that there may be potential for some of these data collection metrics that we're including to maybe get lost in the context to get lost in the in the shuffle where it's like everything is data, but as the human component is incredibly important.
Yeah, absolutely. Treat the person in front of you, not the numbers. Hey, but Clint, there's one thing, and I've tried to say this getting ready for this podcast about 30 times. So, and I've got it wrong every time. I don't know why. Weight making preparedness score. Oh, I got it. But can you talk to us about that? Because this is something I found really interesting, how you're getting in and you are like categorizing these and putting a number on these guys.
Yeah. So what we're trying to do in these, we have three different kind of weight risk scores, and it's based upon the period, the phase of preparation. And the first one, and I apologize if I mess it up too, because we kind of batted around some different terminology for each of these. So the fat-free mass for division is essentially like in an absolute kind of standard, how much lean tissue do you have and how does that compare to your division? And we've kind of reverse engineered some guidelines based on what we find to be realistic in that process. The weight making preparedness score is really looking at body composition, fat mass and lean mass, as well as their resting metabolic rate score as a factor that is that the other score is multiplied by. And so somebody who's incredibly heavy and lean is going to have a harder time getting down because they just don't have much to lose. And especially if they're hypometabolic, then that's compounded and the score actually goes up in that instance. And so that's just kind of looking at the total package. What I will say is, you know, this is really, this is an area where I would say this is a conversation starter. This is not us using, you know, big data analytics to provide this algorithm that we think is foolproof. This is really just creating a conversation as like we're entering a fight camp. What factors do we think are going to influence the athlete's ability to make the weight consistently and effectively and efficiently? And that's really what we want to do. It's not about making it once, it's how is it preparing you for that next time. And that's a combination of factors that we think are important in that process. So it's one of three metrics. And then the third one that I'm sure we'll get into is the weight descent preparedness score. So something along that line, weight making risk score. And that score is something that we look at. And that is a combination of how much weight. So essentially when you have a fight date set or when we're considering a fight date. And again, just this week, I've gone through three athletes where I've plugged this in into our spreadsheet that we're calculating. And it's like, oh, we're in trouble. We need to either get incredibly aggressive or athlete. If you have not confirmed this fight, this may be something we want to reevaluate. It's essentially looking at the percentage of weight loss per week times the number of weeks that you have. So it's a combination of, you know, essentially calorie deficit required per day, per week, times the duration. Science tells us we can lose more weight for a shorter period of time. But when we start to extend that over longer period of time, then the metabolic impairment starts to creep up on us. And so it's balancing the kind of extreme nature of a calorie deficit times the duration required.
And Clint, I think this is a great segue because one thing I really enjoyed about this is, and this is moving into the fight camp, the part three fight camp phase, is within your fueling strategies, you and the team are using these assessment protocols to build these fueling strategies, and then you're monitoring them. Can you talk to us about, because this is something I really like that you discuss, because I feel like as a practitioner, you see it, but when you look around for research or papers to talk about and describe, it's not there. And how do you adjust? Okay, these guys this week came in this heavy. What is your nutrition approach for it? And it seems simple when you say it out loud, but as far as I've looked, this is the only place that I can find that actually details it. Can you talk to us about it?
Yeah, thanks for that feedback, Jordy. And just like you said, we're evidence informed in this area of sports science and sports nutrition science in particular. We're trying to pull research from, parallel or tangential areas that aren't based upon the athletes that we're seeing. And we have to be really creative with that application. So what we try to do is we use resting metabolic rate as a core assessment for our athletes. And it's not necessarily to say, okay, this athlete's burning 2000 calories a day. We're going to program 1800 calories because that's what 200 calories a week looks like. If you feed them 1800 and they gain weight, well, then something is either off on the calculations that we're providing or off on the calculations that the athlete's consuming, or their body's just not responding to it. And at the end of the day, we have to make an adjustment. And so what we're trying to do is to provide essentially a framework to determine how to increase the acuity of the nutrition intervention and potentially to escalate it based on how the body is responding. We continue to challenge how we do this. And so since publication, you know, even just like a month ago, we continue to improve our evaluation as well as some of the programming metrics that we're using. But what we want to do is to avoid the process of just jumping into the most acute initiative, you know, fueling initiative as is possible, and to really try to be as strategic. And as I've spoken with my team about many, many times, is to fuel athletes as well as we possibly can through the entire fight preparation process, so that on the back end of it, they're as well nourished and as metabolically healthy as we possibly can support. And even over fight week, as you know, Jordy, it's like, how much can we dose while still you know, creating the weight descent response as we possibly can? And that's why the three compartment model of weight loss over fight week is so critical. And similarly, over fight camp, we're adjusting our macronutrients, we're adjusting the macronutrient timing, and we're really supporting, you know, the nutrition periodization model that is so critical for adaptation, and hopefully empowers, you know, providers out there in the field to have some tools at their disposal without just saying, we're just going to pull calories back and stop eating, which is what athletes very often do.
Yeah, absolutely. Hey, Clint, I'm going to give you a sec to scroll down to get to the foundation of fueling strategies for metabolic health, because this is one thing I really enjoyed. And this is really cool to see is your pyramid here of recovery, optimization, and what is harmful. And it's cool because it describes the strategy to do that. People don't really get, like, if someone comes in and they're too heavy, and like you said, you've given them 1800 calories and it's like, oh man, they're not losing weight. Okay, well, maybe you do have to go to that low calorie and that protein sparing. But I like it how this is systemizing it, and it's putting some data and some method behind the madness, or what used to be madness, it seemed. Can you talk to us a little bit about this pyramid and talk about, just briefly, we don't need to break down everything, but the metabolic rehabilitation, the balance plate, the metabolic efficiency, and then the low calorie and protein sparing?
Yeah, 100%. And kind of to the point of that nutrition focus post-fight is what is our purpose with feeding? And you know, especially when I worked in the collegiate setting, it was, I think by and large, the orientation that we would use is much more like athlete empowerment. And in the professional combat sports space, athletes very often just want to be told what to do. And then, like I said, out of camp, they don't quite know. So I feel like this gives us that tool. Is if you had a fight camp that had these specific metabolic considerations, this type, you know, these fueling strategies, this level of you know, challenge with the weight cut, well, then we need to program some metabolic rehabilitation, which is essentially a targeted over refeed that you still utilizes, you know, consistent nutrition timing. It's not wake up late, don't eat all day, and then, you know, compulsively eat at night, which is kind of the norm, I think, in the sport, you know, the combat sports setting post-fight. And so it really uses structure to define something that we need to accomplish in that setting. And so if athletes had a challenging weight cut or fight camp, then we will program that targeted refeed on the metabolic rehabilitation phase. If not, if they just kind of breeze through it, well, then it's just balance plate. It's build some structure. It's build consistent timing. Focus on your self-care, right? That's something that a lot of combat sport athletes maybe neglect. It's providing the foundation of nutrition. And nutrition is a foundation regardless of the sport. Nutrition can be abused, or it can be manipulated, or it can be used as a foundation of performance. And in combat sports, we get to, you know, really optimize with nutrition, especially because we have to make weight. But every other athlete still uses nutrition in a really important way. And this is where that kind of balance plate approach, nutrition timing, self-care, and building tolerance to some of these foods that athletes may have downregulated their ability to utilize them, carbohydrates in particular. Can't tell you how many athletes tell me that they're gluten intolerant, and largely because they don't eat them. And so they downregulate a lot of the pathways that metabolize carbohydrates, and gluten being a, you know, protein that is found within carbohydrate, you know, many carbohydrate sources, they, you know, become intolerant to some of these things and other food intolerances that we see. dairy being another of them. And so what we want to do is to increase the tolerance to food, to all food, to expand those metabolic pathways. And even in that process, we want to move from a respiratory quotient, which is the type of energy, defines the type of energy that you're using, from come fight time, we want to be, you know, maybe 2/3 fat adapted in that low 0.81, 0.82 range ish. And we want to move to the high 0.8s to low 0.9s to improve our capacity to utilize carbohydrates. And a lot of restrictive nutrition tactics, whether it's a tactic or a restrictive mechanism, create essentially a stress response, increases cortisol and everything else, and leads to an insulin resistant like state within the body. And so what we want to do is to expand the body's capacity to use carbohydrates at all intensities, even at rest, and then optimize as fight camp goes on, and then transition back for recovery. And that's part of the process. And as we have to increase the calorie deficit in order to elicit the weight response that we need to support the athlete and their goals, then we may have to move from that balanced plate to a metabolic efficiency, which metabolic efficiency and really energy neutral, it's kind of optimal for performance in an MMA state, because what we know is we need to utilize all three major energy systems that are 6 seconds in length, which is alactic, you know, 90 second to 3 minute, which is going to be our glycolytic lactic, and our aerobic, which is so critical for transitions, for recovery between rounds, for just overall energy metabolism, because it improves our mitochondrial health and capacity. And so because of that, we want to be able to transition the body to use fat more effectively, more efficiently, and improve our capacity there, but also be able to continue to tolerate the carbohydrate load, which is critical come fight time and come your priority training session to get the adaptations you're going to use in your fight. As the weight making demands and continue to increase, we're going to start pulling calories and dosing either carbs or fat, depending on training intensity. And that's going to start to create the calorie deficit in a really targeted way that still supports performance adaptation, but also supports that weight making, you know, the balance that is required to balance those two priorities. And health is still supported in both of those, because we're not creating just a blanket low calorie environment that is so often created, you know, without these tools. If that's not quite working, then we will elevate to low calorie, which maintains protein, even elevates protein to preserve muscle mass, but performance is going to be impacted, because we don't use protein as a metabolic substrate very well. It's like burning oil in your engine. We don't want to be doing that. And so we'll only use that for a short period of time. And then in, you know, the really hard luck cases, and we only want to do this for maybe a couple of weeks, is pull everything, every energy substrate, even potentially reduce the protein dose to muscle thin for a period of time. And that has the most impact around metabolic impairment of what we would provide. Still a lot better than just starving yourself and training more, which is what we see a lot as well when athletes are unsupported or, you know, don't quite have the connection to what we're trying to do. And we have athletes that will tap into us, not be able to commit to it, go do what the only thing that they've known, and then break down and then come back to us. And then we have to start at the full foundation. And there's one athlete that is connected with us right now in particular that has truly fully committed to that process and is treating, and I'm sure we'll get to this, but is treating her metabolic injury as an injury, as well she should, and has essentially removed herself from the fight process and is working on it and is building herself from the ground up. Had we been able to get ahead of this by a few months, we could have used the tools and the programming in that Fueling Fundamentals chapter to elicit the adaptations we needed and kept her kind of healthier, both metabolically and physiologically.
We're talking about this a lot. And like you said, we're going to talk about metabolism a lot because it's the foundation of all of this. And this is probably a question I feel I should have sent you beforehand so you had time to prepare for it. And I apologize in advance. But say, like you just said, a lot of the guys here, it's said they're not in the UFC. It's just people listening. They're just, you know, kicking around where I am in Brisbane or, you know, low-level Las Vegas competitors. Said they don't have access to RMRs and things like this. Are there more, say, qualitative assessments or things that they can use? Say they're going through their fight camp and they're like, oh man, I'm not actually losing weight and I am eating this. Are there other things that they can be looking out for to guide them through this without, as you said, doing some of this metabolic damage?
Yeah. So the resting metabolic rate assessment is really measuring how the body has adapted to low energy availability, which is when the body doesn't have enough energy to do the work that it's being exposed to, both the energy expenditure demands of exercise, as well as biological needs of, you know, maintaining human body, which, you know, for our athletes is going to be somewhere between 1600 and 2800 calories, depending on the size of the athlete, on top of their training demands. And if they're training three or four times a day, as many of our athletes are, you know, that's going to be upwards of probably minimum 3,000, 3,500 calories, up to maybe 5,000-6,000 for our bigger athletes. And so what we're measuring in the RMR is an expression of how the body is adapting to that low energy availability. So that's, it's still fairly superficial in terms of like what's actually being impacted. Ways that athletes can assess, you know, kind of on their own is looking at markers of a number of different biological systems. And I've worked with Dr. Nicole McClellan. She goes by Dr. Cokes online, and she is a sports dietitian and a naturopathic doctor who she and I have partnered up in just an amazing, you know, collaboration and partnership. We're using her expertise in both fields of naturopathic medicine and as a dietitian, and mine as a dietitian, a competitor, and kind of a expert in kind of the mental health side of nutrition, I would say. And what we've been able to do is create a survey that is looking at these different biological systems. Just at a top level view, we're looking at the neurological system, because the HPA axis is essentially the hypothalamic pituitary axis, is how the body's, you know, the pituitary is the master organ that secretes hormones that then secrete and elicit a response in all of the hormonal pathways down the body. And that can be damaged in concussion. And all of these areas are kind of bidirectionally related. So a concussion can impact metabolism, and then a metabolism impacts neurological response. So are you having changes in hearing and light sensitivity? Are you having, you know, concussion-like symptoms that are maybe not, maybe related to concussion, but maybe not? So that neurological side, you know, your sex hormones. So for women, that's oftentimes reflected in the female athlete triad type symptoms. So your menstrual irregularity, missing periods, you know, can be very normalized in many sports settings, but that is a big flag in terms of, you know, sex hormone dysfunction. And that's probably the easiest one for our female athletes that are most at risk. As well as kind of extreme periods, you know, whether it's bleeds, bloating, those kinds of symptoms. And then for men, it's going to be loss of libido. It's the loss of sex drive, changes in performance and motivation. Those are in mood are going to be things that are the telltale signs there. We're looking at circadian rhythm as something that's critically related to metabolism. We at the Performance Institute have the good fortune of an amazing partnership with Oura Ring, which allows us to track sleep, recovery, HRV, resting heart rate, and even core temperature, which is, you know, pretty vital, especially for our female athletes. We're tracking core temperature and also for COVID risk factors. We're looking at digestion and digestive health. And how many athletes have you worked with, Jordy, that just can't eat before they train? And so then they end up training all day, so they don't eat all day. And that's a really big issue, both for energy availability, but then also how do you get out of your rut? And so gut training is an important thing, but also recognizing that this is a symptom, you know, chronic constipation, you know, excessive diarrhea, these things can be symptoms of actually impacted metabolism. And digestive health impairment can oftentimes increase things like leaky gut, which is directly related to autoimmune diseases, and developing food intolerances based on the restriction and the bad weight cuts and everything else. So that's the fourth area we're looking at, like fluid status, and something that I became aware of working with some athletes that are chronically water loaded, right? Where they're drinking 2 gallons of water, no salt, eating clean, and their mineral corticoid, glucocorticoid system gets dysfunctional. And so they end up losing weight for a couple of weeks, and then they start gaining weight, gaining fat. And it's this stress response and become insulin resistant. If you look at their labs, because they're chronically water loaded, and then they get to fight week and they can't lose any water. And for us, that's tough because we oftentimes don't know where there's a language barrier, and it's very sport cultural. The Brazilians, for example, they come from a jiu-jitsu background where it's mat side weigh-in. So there may be value to kind of like slowly bring that weight down. But in MMA, they kill themselves getting to fight week when they're already dehydrated. We're also looking at mood and mental health and just the self-care piece. And this creates a referral process actually through this to our sports psych team, which is amazing. And then the last one is, you know, the stress tolerance. There's one more that I'm blanking on, but there's seven different systems that we're looking at. And then we create kind of a overall score. So what I would say is if you can look through these different systems at areas of dysfunction, that maybe something feels like it's not off, that might give us clues that that we can address those. This paradigm is kind of generally developed, and it's called relative energy deficit for sport. And what we've done is kind of translated it to specific symptoms that we would see within our mixed martial arts population. And we tried to break that out pretty robustly in the metabolic rehabilitation section within the journal, and to provide some tools, not only around the assessment, but then also some of the intervention pieces.
Being very conscious of time here, Clint, but quickly to go over, because this ties in nicely with the post-fight review. And I think it's a good learning point for guys who are listening in who, like you said, sometimes when you've got to make that weight, you've got to use those more aggressive strategies. And it's that caveat, like you were saying, in that Venn diagram between health, performance, and weight, right? Like if you really need to focus on the weight, you're probably going to pull away from your health, this being one, and do some damage to your metabolism. In this post-fight review that you're talking about, are these things that you're suggesting athletes, you know, sit down and go over with either their practitioner or just self-reflective? Okay, what's happening? And then I guess the next thing is, what kind of conversations are you having with the athletes to encourage them to do that? Like you said, and we were speaking about earlier, these guys can get very fixated and not letting their weight come up, or, you know, that 52-week fight camp, they can take that quite literally and just continue their fight camp diet outside of fight camp. So what type of conversations are you having with the athletes if they fit into this category and you go, you know what, we need to do some work here?
Yeah. And what I'll give just a bit of a caveat to the journal too, is like, these are in some regards kind of like aspirational, and we're not saying that this is something that every UFC athlete that we work with is going through this post-fight review, but this is what we think would be a really robust and productive conversation. And there are athletes that we will sit down with every provider or every member or a member of every different discipline within our performance team and review what went well, what didn't, and what can be improved upon. And so 100%, this is kind of what we're aspiring to. We're doing on case-by-case basis to support those athletes that are truly committed to the process. As you know, athletes have a varying degree commitment to what we're trying to support them with. And so this is like that gold standard athlete that is a dream for us, that walks in the door and is doing everything that we ask, and they're asking more of us and, you know, challenging us to provide more. That's 100% what we're looking to do. And on the nutrition front, it's looking at how did everything that we implemented work? How did the fueling strategies, how did the weight descent strategies, how did the recovery strategies, how is the supplementation supportive of what we were doing? Were you able to eat at the times that we talked about? How was your preparation for fight week? And the fight week preparedness piece is something that we're continuing to evaluate. And I know, Jordy, you and Charles and myself and Reed have had conversations around some of these things, around heat acclimatization and things like that. How did these things prepare us to make the weight? And how were we affected by that weight cut come the time we stepped into the octagon? And then how is our performance in relation to things that could be impacted by nutrition, not controlled by nutrition because we're a support team, but how is energy, how is focus, how is timing, how is your recovery? And then post-fight, how did you transition in that next phase? I think is important. And then that's really where we want to engage them.
Yeah. Very last question before I want to ask you, Clint, because you've been involved with this and not just combat sports with your role at the UFC, you've been involved with combat sports your whole life at a very high level. and you've seen it. And we often talk about, you know, the weight cutting issue, and you would have this conversation all the time. And I think what you guys are doing is nothing but productive, but I want to hear it from you. How do you feel the culture of weight cutting, let's say MMA, because I guess we spend a lot of time there. Do you feel like the culture is changing?
I do sometimes. I think that it's, you know, to put it simplistically, it's two steps forward, one step back. I think that a lot of it is building relationships with athletes and coaches is part of it, and influencing the culture and the community there. Providing resources, I think, is a big part of it, because you don't know what you don't know in many regards. It's building relationships with those that are establishing rules and managing them. So I've had the great fortune and honor to collaborate with the Association of Ringside Physicians a couple of times in the last year. We've been able to work with the IMAF folks, the International Mixed Martial Arts Federation. And those are kind of groups that are working to support the athletes in a different orientation. I would like to continue to engage, you know, commissions who are establishing the rules, and, you know, the inconsistencies in different commissions makes it challenging in certain regards. And I'm continuing to work with our team, you know, on the other side of campus here at the Performance or at the UFC. Sorry, I'm the Performance Institute. We're doing everything we can, but at the UFC, and that's, you know, there's a lot of different interests that are rightfully so are different than mine. And the UFC has a business interest. Commissions have their own interests. Coaches and athletes, of course, have their own. And so it's important to respect those while still trying to influence change. And I think from my perspective, I continue to be of the mind that as much culture change as we can influence, the better. But that's only going to be a partial fix. And we need to address not only how nutrition is valued and utilized within the athlete community, but we also need to influence the decision makers, the policy makers, because I think that there's going to continue to be catastrophic results, not only missed weights, of course, but poor health results. And at the end of the day, you know, poor financial results when big fights are off and things of that nature. And so I think we all have a shared interest in making the fights more consistently happen, and to do it in a way that you know, improves the sport and improves the perception publicly of the sport, because I think that remains to be something that is a bit of a black eye within the public image of mixed martial arts.
If that ain't the best answer to that question I've ever heard, I don't know what is. So if there's anyone's listening, go back and listen to that again. But Clint, thank you so much. I realize we're at time now and you got Reed waiting. I don't mind keeping Reed waiting, but I don't want to make you late. But Clint, I actually didn't do this. I listened to our podcast last time. I totally blanked and forgot to ask you, if people want to get in contact, they want to pick your brain, they want to follow you on socials, how can they do that?
I am known as SportRD Clint on Twitter and Instagram. I'm not super active on TikTok, although I did have a meeting yesterday with our social media team about TikTok, so it's a thing. But yeah, SportRD Clint is my handle, and I look forward to getting at least like 5 more followers after this and answering any questions that come about as a result of you know, people listening and hopefully you know, hearing some, you know, thought-provoking conversation between Jordy and myself.
Yeah, absolutely. TikTok, I agree, Clint. It's the future. We don't want it. You don't want it. I don't want it. No one wants it, but it's here to stay. So embrace it, everyone. But Clint, I'll let you get to your next meeting. Thank you so much for coming on. Always such a pleasure chatting to you. Always get so much. And until next time, mate.
The last area of metabolic health is inflammation. I was like opening all my old, I was trying to, 7 things is way too many things to remember.
No, that's all right. I'll chat to the guys who edit and see if they can do it. They know more than I, but all right, mate, I'll let you get back to it. Thanks again.
All right. See you, brother.
And there it is, another episode of the Fight Science Podcast. Clint is a real thought leader in not only the combat sports space, but the entire sports nutrition world. He and his team at the PI are offering amazing insight into how they program their nutritional protocols for their athletes in the latest version of the journal. I highly encourage all practitioners listening to go have a thorough read. This podcast will be available through the podcast app, iTunes, Spotify, YouTube, and you'll also be able to download it from my website, www.thefightdietitian.com/podcast. If you enjoy listening to the podcast, then be sure to head to the podcast app to give us a rating and leave us a review. Thanks for listening in, and I'll see you guys for the next episode of the Fight Science Podcast.